Eric Metaxas here. Please join me in a life-saving mission to set Sudanese slaves free through Christian Solidarity International. Since 1995, CSI has freed more than 100,000 women and children from years of bondage and abuse. Your $250 gift frees, feeds, and heals these captives and sets them on a path to a new life in freedom. Please help us free another slave now. Call 888-253-3522, 888-253-3522, or click the CSI banner at MetaxasTalk.com, MetaxasTalk.com. Folks, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show, sponsored by Legacy Precious Metals. There's never been a better time to invest in precious metals. Visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey, folks, if I seem tired in my voice, it's probably because I'm extremely tired. I'm faking only being tired. That's acting. When you're extremely tired and you only seem tired, that's being a professional. I'm so exhausted because yesterday was the launch day of the book, my new book, Letter to the American Church. And oh, my goodness, I did so much media, which is a blessing, but it is absolutely exhausting. I even did stuff yesterday that they didn't air yesterday, but I was on with Charlie Kirk in, I guess at 2 o'clock. He had me on for the whole hour.
Yep.
And it was pretty extraordinary, really, to do an hour with Charlie. And I think that accounts for, here's the good news, Albin, I think you just mentioned it to me, but the book hit the top 100 on Amazon.
Yes.
Yesterday, which I have to tell you, and it's still in the top 100 right now. That's a big deal, folks. So any of you who ordered the book in the last few days in particular, I want to say thank you, because I know I mention this every time I come out with a book, but it is really vital to the success of a book that it do very well in the beginning and that it bump onto bestseller lists. Otherwise, it pretty much gets forgotten. It's one of those, it kind of feeds on itself. If it does well out of the gate, it gets more attention. So I've been posting on my social media, and if you get my newsletter at ericmetaxas.com, some terrific interviews that people have done with me about the book, just to give you an idea of what's in it if you haven't read it. But it hit number 65 sometime in the middle of the night. And this morning when I got up, I think it was at 70 or 71 or something like that.
Yeah.
On the Amazon. Now, that's the only way we can know, because these other bestseller lists are, you know, weeks and weeks in advance. But for it to be in the top 100 on Amazon with a title like Letter to the American Church, that's kind of a big deal. Yeah. And, you know, Albin, I know I've said this to you, but I will say this to the audience. I ask for your prayers, folks, because we're in a tremendous battle right now. And when I say we, I mean in the country. We are, as you know, facing things. The reason I wrote the book is because I flat out say that if we do not wake up, if the church does not wake up and heroically, courageously fight for the truth and speak the truth, God will hold us accountable. And I'll say that flatly, that it is the fault of American Christians for the state of Christianity. For the state of America. It's the fault of the church for the state of America. The church is supposed to be the conscience of the nation, in the words of Bonhoeffer. We're supposed to be the voice for the voiceless. And when we're silent on every one of these hot button issues, it doesn't matter where you look. The tremendous overreach of the government and of social of big tech in bullying us during the pandemic, all of this stuff, which is out of the Marxist playbook, it's big state, it's the opposite of liberty. These things are evil, and they are, no matter where you look. You've had most in the church be silent, be compliant, which is precisely like the German church, which is what I say. So it really is a battle. This is not about selling books. This is about getting a message out, because it is my belief that this is where things stand right now, and that the American church will go precisely on the path of the German church unless we understand where we have erred, why we have been silent. In the book, I try to explain why good people are still being silent or are saying things like, oh, we're being too political. We shouldn't be political. We've mistaken the gospel for politics. No, that is not the issue. Maybe some people have done that, but most people have done the opposite. Most people have been silent in the name of what they think is the gospel, and they have refused to be involved, whether politically or in any other way. That is why we are in these bleak, in the bleak situation in which we find ourselves. So now, Albin, today we are airing two exciting hours. Yeah. I'm speaking to Megan Basham. She's a hero, folks. I want to tell you, she is one of the few voices, particularly in the Christian community, speaking clarity and truth. She will be on this show in hour two, in hour one, in a couple of minutes. We're going to air. Albin interviewed me about the book, just so you don't have to look anyplace beyond the show. We just did it right here. But Albin interviews me about the book. But if you sign up for the newsletter, ericmetaxas.com, we'll send you all kinds of stuff, because there's just honestly all kinds of stuff that we want to share with you. I have to mention, Albin, last night, Suzanne gets a call from her sister that the code Eric is not working at mystore.com or mypillow.com.
No, you got to be kidding
so
me.
I said, that doesn't make sense. So I checked and it wasn't working. So I immediately texted Mike Lindell. Now, if you want to know how insane Mike Lindell is on all the time. He immediately texts me back. We're looking into it. I mean, I find him superhuman. The man is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was fixed within a few hours. At least it was fixed for me. But if you had problem when you went to mystore.com or mypillow.com using the code Eric, that was fixed. So I did want to mention that.
Yeah. And please order the coffee. Ann and I are almost finished with our first 2-pound bag. You got to get the coffee. It is amazing.
It's funny that he got into the coffee business, isn't it? I find it hilarious. Like he the sleep guy got into the coffee business. Yeah. Wake up and go to sleep. So we should also mention I am today flying to Dallas. I'm going to be on Daystar TV. I'm going to be with John Zmirak doing something for the stream, which will air ASAP. I'm speaking at a conference on Friday. I always forget the name of the conference, the Wake Up Conference in Dallas, in Rowlett, Texas. If you can get to that, please get to that. And then you don't want to forget Sunday. If you can get to Times Square in New York City, folks, it's going to be crazy. There's going to be a Let Us Worship event with Sean Foyt. I'm going to be there. I'm in the film Super Spreader. There's going to be a screening of the film after that. I think the theater is now full. So I don't know. I don't know. What do I know? I just got to show up. And we don't want to forget Socrates in the City with Andrew Klavan is coming up Tuesday. That's 6 days from today. I don't believe this. 6 days from today. Andrew Klavan, Socrates in the City. It's just nuts. Now, tomorrow, I think we have a John Zmirak tomorrow?
Yes, we've got John Zmirak tomorrow.
Okay, so we have Ask Metaxas. We have John Zmirak. We got a number of other things tomorrow. I think we got Joel Rosenberg tomorrow. And on Friday, folks,
Great
Dick Morris. Dick Morris is amazing. In fact, I think he's going to be at the Socrates event. If you ever wanted to meet Dick Morris, the guy is a legend. I just want to tell you, he is absolutely astonishing. But the Socrates in the City event, if you go to socratesinthecity.com, you can sign up for that. And I do say, if you know somebody, like a young person in the New York area, this would be a wonderful thing to send them. They're always attractive young people wearing jackets and ties and, you know, dresses. And it's just, it's kind of a beautiful event. And Alvin, are you going to be there on Sunday?
I'm going to try to be there on Sunday. I'm having a procedure done on Thursday.
We can't talk about that on the air. We can't talk about it on the air. Okay. Well, anyway, folks, so we got Megan Basham. We have Alvin interviewing me. If you haven't gotten a copy of the new book, Letter to the American Church, please do it today. Yeah. God bless you. In case you haven't been paying attention, the Biden administration has caused a financial crisis and they have no clue how to fix it. Oil prices have skyrocketed, and when oil prices go up, the cost of transportation and shipping spikes, leading the prices of goods to rise. And when we're already seeing record inflation, that's the last thing we need. Our economy is in trouble, and you need to take steps to protect yourself. If all your money is tied up in stocks, bonds, and traditional markets, you are vulnerable. Gold is one of the best ways to protect your retirement. No matter what happens, you own your gold. It is real. It is physical. It's always been valuable since the dawn of time. Legacy Precious Metals is the company I trust for investing in gold. They can help you roll your retirement account into a gold-backed IRA where you still own the physical gold. They can also ship gold and precious metals safely and securely to your house. Call Legacy at 866-528-1903 or visit them online at legacypminvestments.com. Is the government the best mechanism for fighting poverty? Are there any real-life examples of communities successfully combating addiction and homelessness today? How can we best deliver hope to our nation? Those questions get answered September 23rd on SalemNow.com in an inspiring new motion picture from Kingstone Studios based on a true story. In No Vacancy, a demoted journalist finds her cynicism slowly transformed as she befriends a recovering addict while working a story about a church struggling to purchase a motel for homeless families. No Vacancy, starring Dean Cain, T.C. Stallings, and Sean Young, is based on the true story of First Baptist Leesburg, Florida, and a real location, the Samaritan Inn. Movie reviewers are saying movies like this bring purpose to the big screen. Well produced and the acting is tops. Enough cannot be said about how incredible this true story is, and this film does it justice. Pre-order it September 19th at SalemNow.com. Watch the movie on demand or buy the DVD on Friday, September 23rd at SalemNow.com. That's SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. Hey there, folks. If you listen to me on this program and anywhere I speak, I'm generally speaking about the same kinds of things, which is what led me to write my new book, Letter to the American Church. The silence of the church, the madness that we're experiencing as a nation is so extreme that the idea that people in the American evangelical church would be silent or would be even on the wrong side of many of these issues is just astonishing and horrifying to me. In the midst of all of this, there are just a handful of people who seem to get it right and be bold and speak about it. So it's tragic that there's just a handful, but it's glorious that there is a handful of people because God can use a remnant. One of those voices is my guest right now, Megan Basham, who's a culture reporter with Daily Wire, and it's my joy to have her as my guest right now. Megan, welcome.
Thank you. It's my joy to be here. I'm a huge fan.
You are really, honestly, on Twitter and other places, I've seen you say what you have to say. It's very encouraging to folks like me because there are so few in the evangelical universe who seem to see things with the clarity that I do by God's grace. And I want to talk to you about some of that stuff, a little bit of, to get your background also, to what brought you to this place, because there's so many people out there that are, they're either saying nothing along the lines of what you're saying or what I'm saying, or they're flat out getting it wrong and opening the door to cultural Marxism in what I assume is ignorance of the evil of it.
Well, you know, we'll get to that because I think there's different motivations here. I think there is some ignorance, but I also think there's some deliberate infiltration, and I don't think you can dismiss that. So, you know, I came to this place as somebody who came to faith a little later in life, in my early 20s. I just kind of talked about this at the National Conservatism Conference, that I, you know, I was someone who was very given to licentiousness in college and kind of embraced the Arizona State Playboy's number one party school life. And I ended up really broken and lost and miserable. And at that time, my childhood faith came back to me, and I remembered, where do I go here? Where do I get help? And I'm not being dramatic to say I called on the Lord and said, God, just help. I didn't even know if I believed anymore, but I called out help and felt this compulsion to go back to church on my own. And I started going back to church. And during that time, just really became a different person, as one should when one comes to faith. Transformed, met my husband, formed a family, formed a career, just did things that I did not have the strength to do before that. And so I think that's part of why I have become so passionate about protecting the church and what the church does. Because what the church is not here to do is to form progressive activists. And had I entered a church like that, I don't think I would have personally experienced that kind of transformation. And here I am 20 years later, doing wonderfully. We still attend church. Our children are being raised in the faith. And I thank God for that church in Phoenix, who was not trying to convince me to become a racial activist or a progressive activist. So I feel very protective of that. So I think that's part of why I am so motivated on this topic. And so that was really how I started writing about it. And then on a personal level, again, I was at a magazine where, if you read the New York Times or the Washington Post, there was a lot of coverage of World Magazine, where some of that happened. There was some progressive activism coming in. If you know some of the players, Jamar Tisby, who has been somebody who's a writer who's very outspoken on a problem of whiteness in evangelicalism, and we need to decolonize from whiteness. And so he was receiving awards at that time from World Magazine, and that was really troubling to me. There were other voices that we were not interested in hearing from, like Vodi Bakum. And, you know, so there was a struggle within, and let me say, I feel that World Magazine is really riding the ship, and they have dealt with some of that. But I saw it firsthand. I saw this sort of infiltration of progressive ideology. And that was part of what really motivated me to write about this stuff for the Daily Wire.
It's astonishing that, you know, not some people are tracking with us. Other people are on the fringes. Maybe they don't know about World Magazine or what. But I just have to say that when you see what has happened, you know, it's time to sound the alarm bell. I mean, when World Magazine started drifting in that direction, I couldn't be more astonished. I said, what in the world is going on? I've been friends with Marvin Olasky for years. How is it possible that they could not get this, that they would miss this, that they would allow this stuff to happen? It didn't make any sense to me. When it happened to Christianity Today, I have no words. I you know, they have been taken over by progressives. And so I am more worried, really, about the people who are being influenced in the wrong direction, mm-hmm. who think that that's Christianity. And you realize, no. These folks have slid in the wrong direction, and they are taking millions with them. And so we're in a battle. It's just an amazing, amazing thing that folks like you or me would be accused of being political. And you think, how am I being political? I'm speaking what I know to be true for the sake of people in the church, for the sake of people outside of the church. But we are living at a time where people are really just repeating cliches about, right. You know, you've got to keep politics separate from the faith. And you think, first of all, that's not true. Secondly, if my politics is left, you're not saying that. You're only saying that for people who thought it was a good idea to vote for Trump, for people who think maybe I should question the vaccines or the election, or anybody who might disagree with you. You say they're being political and they need to shut up. But the voices doing the opposite are being applauded. And right. you have on places like Twitter and at Daily Wire, you've been you've given some of those folks pushback.
Yeah. And I think part of what, you know, I would say is that this notion that people aren't really seeing it isn't actually true. I think there are a lot of people, just average people in the pews who are seeing it and they're feeling attacked by their evangelical leaders, by their church leaders. It's really those, and you might say institutional positions who are sort of towing this line. And I think that's it's an issue of reputation idolatry. They do not want their reputations to be tarnished by being seen to associate with, let's say, the great unwashed masses in the pews. So I think that's part of what we're seeing. So we are reaching a point where people do see it. You know, to give you an example, a story I'm working on right now, the National Association of Evangelicals, they just came out with this huge report on a very, what they say is a deeply pressing biblical issue, just of high, high priority. You go, oh, well, what is this issue? Climate change. That's what they're talking about out there. So, and keep in mind, this is not some left-wing organization. The National Association of Evangelicals, the NAE, is where Reagan went in 1983 to give his evil empire speech. It's where George Bush sort of kicked off his re-election, George W. Bush kicked off his re-election campaign. So this was understood to be a theologically conservative organization. It represents some 45,000 Protestant churches. And they released this report on climate change, and they explicitly argued that we have a mandate as Christians that it is part of the Great Commission to become climate change activists and to lobby your legislators and your corporate forces out there, your Disney's, any of these large corporations, to get active on the issue of reducing carbon emissions and passing fossil fuel legislation. And you go, how is this not political? And so what they do is they couch it in this sort of Christianese jargon by saying that, well, this is a creation mandate. They titled this report, Loving the Least of These. And their primary evidence for why we should do this, the scientific source they were looking to, was a division of the UN, a deeply compromised division of the UN, by the way, that has been awash in corruption and scandal for fake, just like vaccines, for faking research, for suppressing certain findings in their studies. So, you know, that's really alarming when you go, this organization has done nothing. They have issued no reports on transgenderism. They have made no resolutions on the transgender movement's impact on children, on women, on girls, nothing. And yet they have issued multiple reports now.
Well, you're making my case, but you're far better than I can make it because you know the facts on this. But the NAE, the National Association for Evangelicals, Christianity Today, these things that once were at the center of Christian faith in America have gone over the edge. Ladies and gentlemen, you need to know these folks no longer represent God in America in the way that they did. And we need to remind, we need to know that things have changed. We need to know, we need to shift our view of things because it's madness when I hear this kind of thing. We're going to be right back talking to Megan Basham. But folks, these are the headlines right now. I hope you're paying attention. We'll be right back. And then I realize I'm wrong in thinking that she really... You've heard and seen most of the truth behind the events of January 6th. And now you can visit Washington, D.C. on September 24th and join J6 Solidarity and their peaceful and patriotic event that will expose the entire truth of January 6th at our nation's capital, and not just what mainstream media has lied about. Join J6 Solidarity and their well-known guest speakers to discuss the wrongful arrest and incarceration of all the January 6th patriots. Hear what speakers like Salem Media's Dinesh D'Souza, Newsmax's Johnny Tobacco, Joel Altman, the host of Conservative Daily Podcast, Professor David Clements, and many more have to say. This peaceful event will take place on September 24th in Washington, D.C., next to the Federal District Court. For all the details, go to their website, the letter J, the number 6solid.com. That's J6solid.com. Don't have your head in the sand. Learn the truth. Go to J6solid.com now. Thank you for your time, your patriotic loyalty, and as always, God bless America. J6solid.com. Tell me, Eric, why is Relief Factor so successful at lowering or eliminating pain? I'm often asked that question. The owners of Relief Factor tell me they believe our bodies were designed to heal. That's right, designed to heal. And I agree with them. So the doctors who formulated Relief Factor for them selected the four best ingredients. Yes, 100% drug-free ingredients. Each helps your body deal with inflammation. Each of the four ingredients deals with inflammation from a different metabolic pathway. And that right there, approaching from four different angles, may be why so many people find such wonderful relief. So if you've got back pain, shoulder, neck, hip, knee, or foot pain from exercise or just getting older, you should order the 3-week quick start discounted to only $19.95 to see if it will work for you. It works for me. It has for about 70% of the 500,000 people who've tried it and have ordered more. Go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF to find out about this offer. Feel the difference. Welcome back. I'm talking to Megan Basham, who is cultural reporter for the Daily Wire, used to be with World Magazine. Megan, it's just bizarre because I said to you, this is the week that my book came out, Letter to the American Church, and I wasn't planning to talk to I have wanted to talk to you for weeks. And it strikes me that what you're saying is exactly part of what I'm saying in the book and what I'm saying in every interview that I give, that the world has changed and you have all of these evangelicals who want to pretend as though it hasn't changed. And they want to pretend like the problem is, you know, whatever cool problem I can be involved with, which is sex trafficking or actual fake problems like, you know, climate change. And they refuse to speak on the issues that everyone in the pew is dealing with, whatever it is, whether it's the nefariousness of the pseudo administration that is allowing Marxism, cultural Marxism, economic Marxism to come into America to destroy the economy. In other words, the very things that the church ought to be speaking out loudly and boldly, it is utterly silent on. But even worse, many people, whether it's Russell Moore at Christianity Today or others, they're talking about absolute nonsense as though to give cowardly people an out to say, well, don't worry about all that nasty, divisive stuff. Just come over here and let's talk about climate change. And that's what God wants you to do. It's complete madness. It's stunning to me that we're having this conversation.
Yeah. And I think, I think we're now at a point where the battle lines have been drawn, as Vody Bakum said in his book, the fault lines are now cracking open and it's coming to the surface. And that's what you're starting to see at some of these organizations is that either people are leaving, people are speaking up. And so while it's, on the one hand, it's a very discouraging development, I'm also somewhat encouraged by the fact that we're having these conversations openly, because I think for a long time, you know, there are jokes about the 11th commandment, which is thou shalt not criticize church leaders publicly. And certainly we don't want to do that thoughtlessly. We don't want to do it carelessly. We want to, you know, think very carefully about, okay, how do we do this biblically? But I feel that we have gotten to a point where we need to have these conversations openly. Yeah. We need to have a Paul moment of, I opposed Peter to his face.
No, listen, this is why, one of the reasons I want to have you on, because you're one of the few people that is doing this publicly. And even, I mean, listen, I say my thesis in my book is that the German church was silent and it led to satanic disasters. And the American church today is being silent and it is leading clearly to satanic disasters, things that we can't even imagine today that will happen if the church continues to be silent. But what I say, based on what you just said to react to it, is that I am naming names, which I hadn't done before. Mm-hmm. And I'm even saying, look, some of these folks are good people, but they're getting it wrong. When Tim Keller insists on this third way thing that was perfectly apt in 1995 and 2005, here's the problem. The world has changed. It is no longer sensible to act as though, well, the Democrats have some good points and the Republicans. We're now living in a world of madness where madness is being pushed by the Marxist left. And so to pretend that we're dealing with Bill Clinton when we're dealing with Karl Marx and we're dealing with, you know, pretty crazy people. So to pretend that that's not the case is to mislead millions. And I mean, he is an example of a good guy. We had Andy Stanley write a book recently called Not In It to Win It, which blew my mind. It's the exact opposite of what I say in my book. He's completely wrong, but he thinks he's right, and he's misleading millions. And then Jim Daly of Focus on the Family gave it a wonderful blurb. And I thought, I need to speak up, because our nation is at stake. When the church is silent or getting these things wrong and therefore being silent, you see what is happening. But what do you see that is happening in America right now? I mean, I want to hear from you on that.
Yeah, well, one thing, you know, I think we need to say is it's not just they're not speaking up. They're starting to change what they have said. I love Tim Keller. I've benefited a lot. One of the people when I became a Christian in my early 20s who I listened to a lot was Tim Keller. So this is not to, I don't want to bash him. Let me put it that way. But at the same time, he has now started to go to a place where he says, look, the Bible doesn't necessarily tell us how to stop abortion. He has directly said that, implying that you don't necessarily have to vote for pro-life candidates. Well, there are victims of that mentality. There are victims of that argument. There are babies who will die when you teach that kind of theology, political theology. There are the same thing you'll see with transgenderism. If we don't speak up, our neighbors will suffer. Yeah, and we're not going to be the light that the world sees when we decide that we need to be quiet about that. Or when you have the president of the Southern Baptist Convention say we need to embrace pronoun hospitality and use transgender pronouns, that is the kind of thing that has an impact on our communities, on our culture. And that happened, yes. But that actually brings me to, again, a silver lining here. Because people are starting to speak up, you are starting to see maybe some rethinking. Let's put it that way. So that Southern Baptist Convention president, he has now walked that back and said, I made a mistake 2 years ago when I said that. You've seen it with some other church leaders who have said, you know what, I was wrong about that. So I think we need to start going, if we speak up, they may be convinced and change their minds.
That's literally why I wrote my book, because I said, I know there are people who can be persuaded. I know the Lord wouldn't have called me to write this book. He wouldn't be calling you to say these things if there weren't hope. So I have hope. But folks, we are in an amazing battle right now. We'll be right back more with Megan Basham when we come back. MyPillow is having their biggest sheet sale of the year. You've all helped build MyPillow into the amazing company it is today. Now Mike Lindell, inventor and CEO, wants to give back exclusively to my listeners. That's you. The Percale and Giza Dream bed sheet sets are available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they're now all on sale for as low as $29.98 with our listener promo code. Order now, because when they're gone, they're gone. The Percale and Giza Dream sheets are breathable and have a cool, crisp feel. They come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Don't miss out on this incredible offer, because there's a limited supply, so be sure to order now. Call 1-800-978-3057 now and use the promo code ERIC, or you can go to MyPillow.com. Click on the radio listener square and use the promo code ERIC. This offer will not last very long. They're known to sell quickly, so order now with promo code ERIC at MyPillow.com. Promo code ERIC at MyPillow.com. Folks, welcome back. I'm talking to Megan Basham, culture reporter for The Daily Wire. Megan, you've written about so many of these issues, and you get in the weeds. You're a journalist. Sometimes when I read about the kinds of things that you've just mentioned and the names, my head explodes. It's unbearable to me to think that there are people. I think I mentioned when I was writing this book, there was an article in Christianity Today by Russell Moore. And it was absolutely astonishing what he was. He was using very highfalutin, kind of elite language, you know, quoting James Hunter at the University of Virginia, effectively to say that if you're a white evangelical who's worried about America or anything like that, You are merely a culture warrior. All you care about is political power. And so he's basically demonizing people with whom he disagrees as they're bad guys. They are not preaching the gospel. And it was so offensive to me. It was so astonishing to me to read this in the pages of Christianity Today. And then, of course, now he's been elevated to be the head of Christianity Today. But I thought to myself, you know, not to push back on this would be like living in Germany in the 30s and saying, you know, who's to say? I'm going to keep my nose clean. I really believe those are the stakes right now in this country, that the church must speak up and that voices like yours and mine must be bold, because there are millions of people who don't know where to turn and they're hearing these false voices.
Yeah. And I think, you know, historically, we also need to look at the fact that this is not always just an issue of wanting to cozy up to power or wanting to come alongside and be in the club with the elite. There is also, and I'm not going to speculate on, you know, who I think is a deliberate infiltrator. I don't know, but I know that that has happened in the course of history. In the 1940s, Paul Kanger wrote this wonderful book called The Devil in Karl Marx, where he very directly traces Marxist influences who deliberately came into the church, and they called the Christian pastors at that time suckers. He said the biggest suckers that they found when they were trying to spread communism in the United States was Christian pastors.
Yeah.
So he goes into detail about why this desire to be seen as loving, which we do want to be, would sometimes lead them to be not discerning, and they would adopt these communist priorities that they should not have been adopting. And, you know, it's funny because a couple of years ago, my husband and I went on a trip to Boston, and we did a tour of the King's Chapel in Boston. And our guide told us this church was funded in part by the monarchy because they wanted to influence these rebellious colonists to submit to their authority in England. And they wanted to convince them that this was God's will for them to submit to the authority of the crown. And I believe that in a lot of these stories, we're still seeing that today. So there are lessons of history that we see in every period where the church is going to be used. Look, the powers that be know how many people are coming to church to learn, to be taught, to with a deep desire to go, how do I live out my Christian life? Of course, they're going to want to get hold of those handles and try to direct them and try to move them. And I think that's what we're seeing.
Well, yeah, I think you're quite right. It's both. I think that, you know, when I mentioned the article written by Russell Moore, there are a group of people. It's horrifying to read what they write, whether it's Pete Wehner or Michael Gerson, that they used to be, you know, middle of the road evangelical voices. And they have, I don't know, it's because they got, you know, Trump rabies or whatever. I think a friend of mine called it Trump rabies the other day, just a kind of a frenzy that has made them tack dramatically left and attack everything that I thought we're supposed to believe in. But you realize it is because they have been forced. It's really what you just said moments ago, that they've been forced to make a choice. Either you identify with the Walmart deplorables who you never liked anyway, or you identify with the handful of people that are still writing for the New York Times or for this place or that place. And you want to let them know you're not like those other people. And I see a lot of this happening, and they don't speak for the person in the pew. The person in the pew is just looking for truth. So I take some comfort in the idea that these voices are marginalizing themselves, that they are not really speaking to the majority of the people in the church today.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, part of the reason you see that is this, my friend calls it the church back home syndrome. They don't want to be associated with the church back home. And part of that is this idea that cultural Christianity is icky. And I go, no, cultural Christianity is a wonderful thing. Cultural Christianity is what saved me. You know, I grew up not a believer, but I was surrounded by cultural Christianity, so that when I really reached that lost point, that cultural Christianity came back to me, and I knew where to go and what to do and who to cry out to and where to seek help. So I really have a big problem with these guys who are like, oh yeah, and Russell Moore was one of them who said, I'm happy to see cultural Christianity die. And I go, no, cultural Christianity leaves a lot of people in, or the lack of cultural Christianity leaves a lot of people in ruins. And I'll tell you what, since I moved to the South, I love being surrounded by the Bible Belt. It's been great for my kids and I'm grateful for it.
Well, there's an irony too, because there's two kinds of cultural Christianity, to be honest. There are people who are, they are genuinely cultural Christians, which is to say not Christians. And they are kind of promoting whatever it is, leftist activism or something like that. And I would say that they are genuine cultural Christians in the sense that they are not, or they're merely cultural Christians with the emphasis on culture. And then there's cultural Christianity, which is kind of like, you know, the world in which we live, right? And that's what you're talking about, a world that respects God and respects churches, even if there are some people in that who aren't thoroughly converted, they have somehow a worldview. They believe in law and order. They believe in liberty on the American founders model. And they believe in all that stuff, even if the penny hasn't dropped theologically. And so it is a little complicated, but I just have to say that these elites that we're talking about, and again, some of them really good people, whether it's a Tim Keller or Jim Daly, they have really, I think that things have changed and they maybe just can't face the fact that things have changed. So they're sticking to this old script. And I know that you and I and others are saying, folks, things have changed. If we are in a battle, and if you do not fight this battle in the strength of the Lord, you're being used by the enemy. It's a very, very crucial moment that we're in. We'll be right back. Final segment with Megan Basham. Don't go away. Folks, I'm talking with Daily Wire culture reporter Megan Basham. Megan, you're just, again, you're in this stuff and you know kind of what is going on with some of these denominations fighting these battles. Tell me about what you just mentioned to me off the air.
Well, you know, part of what I think we need to see is because we are starting to talk about these things openly again, there are positive results coming from this. I feel that these efforts are being blessed. One example is that the PCA Church, Presbyterian Church of America, has left the NAE over its progressive politicking. And I think that's a really positive development that a lot of institutions are saying enough. So that's one example. And another one, I brought up World, where I used to work earlier. You know, they have been bashed around by the New York Times, by the Washington Post, by a religion news service for actually saying, okay, we have an issue here. And their board stepped in and started to address it. And basically what they said is that we are as committed to deep reporting and journalism as ever, but we are not going to be turned into an outlet for progressive politicking. So they very strongly drew a line there, and that has earned them a lot of ire. And personally, I feel like they're riding the ship and they're not doing politics now. What they're doing is saying, we're gonna look and see if something is a story, then we're gonna report on it, like say Hunter Biden's laptop. That was something that the magazine chose not to report on under the previous leadership.
Now, can we believe that? Like I just want to, I have to stop you and have to say that that's when I knew, this is October of 2020. That's when I knew things had gotten dramatically bad, when all of the mainstream media did not report on what was ostensibly one of the most important stories of our time, not just of the year, like a mind-blowingly important story of corruption at the highest levels with the potential president of the United States, something just any reporter should be drooling to look into this. Not only didn't they look into it, they labeled it Russian disinformation. I mean, it's so crazy. It sounds like something we would make up, but it actually happened. And then even more horrifyingly, folks like World went along with that. It doesn't even seem possible that that could have happened.
Well, I mean, I think what you had was some leadership in the editorial department that wanted to align with what seemed like the respectable establishment media take. And you saw that also with vaccines. I'll just say bluntly, we were very discouraged from looking into any of the official narrative on what the Biden administration, what your officials like Fauci and Francis Collins were putting out on vaccines. So we did not really report on questions at that time because the editor at the top said, we're not going to do that. And so when I look back on that, I go, that was an example of kind of this desire to be seen as respectable by the elite classes. And I'm very cheered to see that that's not the way it's going now.
Well, and again, this is where I get to say, ladies and gentlemen, this is what happened in Nazi Germany. This is, they said, we're not going to cover that. We're not going to talk about that. People died. When you don't talk about the vaccine, the reality of the vaccine, people will die. But you want to be respectable. You just want to go with the crowd. When you go with the crowd, you are leading people to hell. Since we don't have a lot of time, let me just cut to the chase. And the idea, not just that the New York Times would do that, but that World and others would go in that direction. It is one of the reasons I'm just so happy for you, Megan, to be doing what you're doing at Daily Wire. We've got to get you back ASAP, not enough time, but thank you so much for your work and for your time.
Thank you so much for having me, Eric. I appreciate you being one of those voices as well.
Just all right.